evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working on this pre-recorded program via remote. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, July 9, 2021. President Salva Kiir promises to pay civil servants on time during his independence address to the nation.
Today I am directing the two ministries of finance and planning and that of petroleum to dedicate 5,000 barrels of the Nile blend in order to regularize salary and operation fund payment.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. President Salva Kiir pledged to improve security across South Sudan and implement economic reforms stipulated in the revitalized peace agreement to ease the suffering South Sudanese have been experiencing over the past 10 years. Delivering his 10th independence anniversary speech to the nation earlier today in a live television broadcast, Mr. Kiir said the government will ensure civil servants are paid regularly. He also said the government will continue to dialogue with holdout groups to end conflict in parts of the country. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
Addressing the nation, President Kiir focused his remarks on security and economic reforms. He also took time to note some of the achievements of the unity government.
What has been achieved so far in peace implementation was arrived at through sustained discussions. And this in itself is a great achievement because it puts us on the path of resolving our disputes peacefully and in the process prevents any conflict that can again set back our progress.
Mr. Kiir says the government has developed a public financing management policies.
More oil fields in the producing area have been opened, and an oil refinery that will supply our domestic market with refined products and export surplus to the neighboring countries will soon be fully operational. These and other initiatives in the economic sector are promising, and we should look up to a major improvement in the economy of our country.
Mr. Kiir also addressed the recent attacks on 8 workers by young people who were demanding more employment opportunities from NGOs operating in South Sudan.
I urge you not to undermine our nationalism by focusing on ethnic and regional activism. The national government has heard your concerns and resolved to form a high-level committee under the first vice president and deputized by one of the vice presidents and other relevant ministers to study and develop a roadmap to permanently resolve the matter.
President Kiir says the government has also agreed to set aside a significant amount of oil revenue to build the roads that will connect cities and towns across South Sudan.
We have dedicated 20,000 barrels a day of the Nile blend crude for construction of major highways and roads, linking production areas with the consumption centers in our major cities and towns.
The president admitted the government has been unable to pay civil servant salaries on time.
Today I am directing the two ministries of finance and planning and that of petroleum to dedicate 5,000 barrels of the Nile blend crude per day to strengthen the financial standing of the government in order to regularize salary and operation fund payments.
At the end of his speech, President Kiir assured citizens he would not allow the country return to war. He called on all South Sudanese to work together to, in his words, recover the lost decade. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
Still on South Sudan, some vulnerable groups in the country, including family members of martyrs, orphans, and disabled war veterans, say the government of South Sudan has neglected them since the country gained its independence in 2011. Some of the vulnerable groups say it has been 10 years and the government has done very little to live up to promises made during the liberation struggle for the country. For VOA News, Dengai Deng has more from Bor on this special report.
The civil war between the Sudan's People Liberation Movement, or SPLM, and the Sudanese government, which ended in 2005 with the signing of the Comprehensive Peace Agreement, left thousands of South Sudanese disabled or orphaned, and thousands more widowed. Many of these people hoped the government would provide them with social amenities such as proper health care, welfare and education after the country gained independence in 2011. But a majority of war veterans, the disabled, orphans and widows say the government has neglected them. They say they face significant social and political exclusion and are among the most marginalized in society. 55-year-old SPLA war disabled veteran Chola Ayom lost his right leg after he was shot during the liberation struggle. Ayom says his salary as a disabled soldier is too small to meet all the needs of his family, including his children's school fees and medical bills. He says the government has offered zero support to him or his family.
Dodging bullet from the Arab in the bush was not easy things, but we do not lose heart and keep fighting because we wanted freedom and liberty for our people. Many has died and few of us survive with injury. As you can see, my legs, what I cannot explain well now is what happening after we achieve the goal of liberation. We now have the country and here we are suffering. What happening? The country leaders should explain that better.
50-year-old Mary Duke's husband, SPLA soldier Abdul Kang Makwei, was killed during the 21-year Sudanese civil war. Duke says, like many other women, she has struggled to raise her children with little to no support from the government.
The orphans and widows have completely been forgotten by those who are alive and now managing the country. If the martyrs knew that this is what would happen to their families after giving their lives for the country, I think many of them would have left the struggle. I lost my husband during the liberation struggle and I didn't grieve so much because I knew he sacrificed his life for our freedom. But ever since the country gained independence, widows and orphans have been some things that never came to their thought suffering.
Duke says President Salva Kiir well knows what martyrs endured during the liberation struggle.
He shouldn't allow himself by this time to get engaged so much by other things and forget his colleagues who sacrificed their life for the good of the country. He should by all means try, despite the challenges facing him, to make sure the widows are supported. When independence is celebrated every year, are widows and orphans expected to celebrate? What will we celebrate when we are still suffering in our own countries? Please, some of those soldiers who died to make this country what it is today have families, and those families need support.
Another widow, Awuru Choladol, lost her husband, Simon Atenkwanya Lier, a year after the civil war broke out between Khartoum and the Sudanese People's Liberation Army in 1983. Awuru says after the death of her husband, she believed when the liberation struggle succeeded, her children would benefit from the fruits of their father's sacrifice by having access to quality education and health care. But she says that has not happened.
I cannot say it's better for this country not to have been liberated, but what we the widows now are going through is not good at all. Talking to widows and orphans and telling them all sweet words in rallies all the time is not what we need. We need good schools for our children, we need good hospitals, and we need business training centers for the widows. I've been doing business in second-hand clothes, and that is how I manage to pay school fees for my children. But still, I need assistance.
Adol says she worries about the future because orphans and the disabled make up the largest portion of South Sudan's illiterates and unemployed due to widespread exclusion. Civil rights activist Bol Dengbol, who is with the advocacy group Interfaith South Sudan, says key decision makers know little about the issues facing people living with disabilities, which has led to a negative social attitude and discrimination against people with disabilities. Bol says the South Sudan's constitution requires the government to improve the rights, participation, and accessibility of services for war veterans, widows, and orphans. Bol says the provisions have been all but ignored by politicians.
The disabled community was not even heard from the negotiations. They were not represented in them. When the government when it was being formed in February this year for the state government, there was no mention of them. The ministry, the commission, and all of them. When you look at the ministries, when they are paraded before you, you see no representation. So they are so marginalized. And all of this is the government to blame. Why not see them? If you cannot see them in the government, in the decision-making portfolio, then why not provide them with basic services? There are those who are really beyond poverty line. And, pretty much under poverty line. So it is the role of the government. And I'm calling on the government of Jonglei in particular, to try critically look into this, see how they can help them.
Bol says South Sudan's authorities have had little capacity to respond to medical, educational, and mobility needs of people with disabilities, both before and after the country's independence. He says this is partly because vulnerable people have not pressured government officials to address their needs. Reverend James Dengakir, the Bishop of Makwaj Diocese of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan, says if a nation mistreats vulnerable groups such as widows and orphans, the pleas for help may force God to punish the country. Deng Ajang Duot represents people with special needs, including war disabled and widows, in the Jonglei State Legislative Assembly. Duot says the government has had limited capacity to respond to the medical, educational, and mobility needs of people with disabilities before and after the country's independence. He says the Commission for War Disabled, Widows, and Orphans was supposed to support the financial needs of war veterans, orphans, and other vulnerable people, but has done very little to empower them.
If the vulnerable person, if they cry and you are not giving your ears to, there is a repercussion. Especially God will give punishment. Look here, even as religious leaders, if I'm leading the church and there's something that I don't do and the people are crying, I ignore it, there will be repercussion for that. So in any level of leadership, if the people under you, if they are crying, it is your responsibility to listen to their cry. And if there's something at all you need to do, do it. You will get blessing from the people, and the country or the level of leadership you are in will be blessed.
Duor says once the unity government is fully formed, its lawmakers should push for the revival of the War Disabled, Widows, and Orphans Commission so that something is done to alleviate the suffering of the War Disabled and the families of the martyrs. Several attempts to reach National Defense and Veteran Affairs Minister Angelina Teng for comment on this report were unsuccessful, as her office said the minister was busy. In 2018, President Salva Kiir set government in action to care for the widows, orphans, and wounded heroes of the war was, in his words, a mistake and not deliberate. He apologized to the families of martyrs for the failure of his government to support them and asked them to remain patient.
The commission has almost come to its knees. Likewise, in Juba, there have been no much activities due to the crisis our country is in. So this is what is happening. So from the beginning, there was a bit of progress, and some who were trained and given tailoring machine, they would have improved their life. Those who were given some money to do the business, they were progressing well. But due to the crisis, some of them lost what the capital, and now they are again in dire need.
The South Sudan government was expected to empower the war disabled, widows, and orphans by implementing social and economic activities, including loving and advocating for their rights, providing capacity building and funding education from basic to tertiary levels. Article 23 of South Sudan Transitional Constitution, subsection 203, stipulates that Among the powers of the national government shall be the rehabilitation and benefits to disabled war veterans, orphans, widows, and care for the dependents of deceased war fallen heroes and heroines, end quote. However, in practice, South Sudan's government has not paid benefits to widows, war veterans, dependents, or orphans. In 2015, South Sudan Defense Ministry created a pension program to support families of martyrs. That same year, the National Parliament held a hearing on a bill to improve the welfare of families of martyrs. The Martyrs Family Fund Bill was presented to Parliament but was never brought up for a vote. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaiding in Bor.
A South Sudanese mark their country's 10th independence anniversary. Some residents of Juba say they are yet to experience the freedom and liberty for which hundreds of thousands of people died. Some citizens say while South Sudanese joined the liberation struggle to free themselves from an autocratic system of governance in Sudan, the situation in the new nation has not changed. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wudu has more from Juba in this special report.
Thirty-four-year-old South Sudanese singer Okuta Siza Males, popularly known by his stage name Silver X, came to the limelight in 2009, 2 years before the country's independence, when his album Fetish Shokol was released. The phrase Fetish Shokol, which in Arabic means looking for job, is still commonly heard in conversation among South Sudanese across the country and beyond. Silver X says it was meant to highlight the corruption and injustices that take place during the recruitment process for jobs.
Asymptakimono is like, what's your name? Because literally in South Sudan, you can easily identify, if I tell you my name, you can know it is from this tribe. Then again, they will ask you, Gebeletakishunu. Gebeletakimono is like, well, what's your tribe? And then another one, they will ask you, Itajaminu, as in where are you coming from? You understand? So barely nobody gets to ask you, as in, you know, your qualification.
10 years after independence, voices advocating for good governance, ranging from politicians to activists to musicians, continue to complain about a lack of space to exercise their rights. Several voices blame the Sudan People's Liberation Movement, the main party in the country's unity government, for not doing much to end autocratic rule in South Sudan. Freedom of expression on governance issues is enshrined in the 2012 Political Parties Act, as well as the country's transitional constitution. Despite these legal provisions, members of opposition political parties say they are restricted from expressing their political views on governance, corruption, and other matters affecting the country. Albino Akol Attack, a senior member of the African National Congress, or ANC party, says the government's various security apparatus does not allow opposition politicians to disseminate their party's views. He points out that parties are not allowed to hold political rallies, just like it was before South Sudan gained independence.
As a political party, I'm not getting enough space. Let's say, if I'm now trying to conduct, a public rally, the authorities will come in. Everybody would want me to get permission from it. And this permission is even restricted. I will be asked, what are you going to present in this public rally? Then people will start looking at the topic. If these topics are contrary to what they believe, then I will not be given that permission to conduct a public rally.
In a report released earlier this year, Human Rights Watch documented a number of incidents carried out by National Security Service officers that included the detention of Moses Mandey, director of the Organization for Nonviolence. Mandey was detained because his organization erected billboards that demanded financial transparency in government spending. The report also said security officers detained a political activist identified as Kanbil Noon and held him without charge for 117 days. It said Nun was released on condition that he stops criticizing the government. Researchers and many South Sudanese have blamed the Sudan People's Liberation Movement, or SPLM Party, for perpetuating autocracy. South Sudan's years-long conflict began in the capital Juba over a power struggle within the SPLM Party. The fighting quickly spread to other parts of the country, leading to instability and a devastated economy. Deng Mading is the acting SPLM Information Secretary and a spokesperson. Although he admitted that the leadership of the SPLM plunged the country into conflict, leading to the current state of affairs, he does not believe the ruling party as a whole is to blame for South Sudan's problems.
When we come to the behaviors of the SPLM individuals, this is yes where you can just squarely accuse some individuals within the SPLM by violating the constitution itself within the SPLM, which caused a conflict within the SPLM itself, rank and file. Therefore, I will argue that the individuals' behaviors within the SPLM brought a problem into SPLM as an institution. But the SPLM as the institution on the other side of the argument is still like it was in 1983.
Mading says among various factors, in South Sudan there has always been the underlying problem of people being more loyal to their community than their country.
People are accounted for. That was why there was war. Let us say, for example, in 1991, the first rebel in the SPLM, there was war. People fought. And that is what I told you, South Sudan fell into four traps. One of the traps is ethnic conflict. So people sought and come back to their ethnic people, tribe, to support them. So the accountability is there always.
Boboya Jimmy is a policy analyst at the Juba-based Institute for Social Policy and Research, says a lack of political maturity within the SPLM in understanding political, democratic and governance processes led to the current state of affairs in the country. As the ruling party that came into government for the first time following a rebellion, Jimmy says the SPLM knew little about how to establish functioning government structures, and as a result, few of its self-styled members knew how to take advantage of the vacuum within the party to form a strong democratic government.
Then individuals who are actually the leaders within the SPLM took that as an advantage to begin doing things in South Sudan the way they would like. And one of the issues that I've been talking to many people previously is that if we have leaders who do not understand the democratic rule of law and governance process within a party, such leaders cannot even be able to introduce some of those processes within a government or a governance processes within, you know, in the government, for example.
James says the SPLM party does not have clear, strong policies that commit its members to the party. He says there is no permanent system that holistically addresses challenges within the party, such as ensuring proper discipline and accountability of individuals.
For example, we have, like, you know, at the state level, we have these SPLM structures that once you become a governor of a state, then therefore you become the chairperson of the SPLM. Once you become the commissioner of a county, then you become the chairperson of the SPLM. So some of these processes do not actually provide, you know, head of departments within the SPLM to have a permanent, you know, personnel that could begin increasing accountability process in that sense. So there's a lot of transition, there's a lot of ambiguity, there's a lot of illegality within the SPLM itself, and those factors actually led to lack of accountability in terms of the cadres or the members of SPLM holding their leaders accountable.
In an effort to ensure freedoms and a good governance, Mading says the SPLM has committed itself to implementing the 2018 Revitalized Peace Agreement.
We are going to have a period of going for the election. After the election now, people of South Sudan will judge, because we need to give people of South Sudan a voice and then make your government to be legitimate. Once, because they are a referee, once they say SPLM Now we voted you in, then we will have a social contract. Where now anybody, and we are controlling the government, where everybody must be accountable.
Attack says South Sudanese have no option other than to reach a truce. He says the country's leaders should adhere to what they have already agreed to in the peace deal and move forward.
Let us always do what we have agreed. What we have agreed is this agreement. Let us implement it as it is. And we don't deviate from what we have already agreed. If we do it, at the end of the day, we will find ourselves that there is a fundamental issues that we have already addressed, including the root causes.
South Sudanese youth rights activist Wani Steven Elias from Africa Democracy and Resilience Network says citizens have the right to express themselves on how their country is to be governed. As South Sudanese mark their 10th independence anniversary, Silver X says it should mark a new beginning for the country.
I wish everyone really good luck, and may this 10th anniversary bring us peace, love, unity, you know, and freedom, and really good security. And just like, let me say, reboot a computer when it's tired and you cannot type. So first you reboot it, like, or you restart it, and then when you start, like, comes back fresh. Let's hope like this 10 years like becomes like a restarting point for us to reflect everything that we did in the past, good or bad, and then put a possible way forward that will help every citizen in this country.
The United Nations, the African Union, and the Troika countries of the United States, the United Kingdom, and Norway, and others in the international community have said that South Sudan's leaders should hold the elections at the end of the transitional period as stipulated in the revitalized peace agreement so as to start to put the country on a permanent democratic path. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
That's all we prepared for you in this special broadcast on the 10th anniversary of South Sudan's independence. We now leave you with Ras Kobi with the song Beled Jadid. Been listening to Ras Kobi with the song Beled Jadid. I'm John Tanza. Thanks for being part of this special broadcast marking South Sudan's 10th independence anniversary. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you are out in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.